I'm Sasha.
And I'm Ezra.
And welcome to another episode of our podcast
concerning climate.
Today, we have State Representative Summer Lee. She is the Democratic representative for the 34th District of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives.
So, without further ado, let's get on to the episode.
Stay tuned.
What is your work?
So, hey, Sasha and Ezra, thank you so much for having me today.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm a state representative. It's my job title so it's a state level representative to our House of Representatives, and it's a lawmaker. We pass laws, we write bills. I think we also do some advocating, so for important issues, we may advocate around it and bring in stakeholder groups. We, of course, expand the electorate. So we interact with our constituents and we inform them and we let them know what's going on in the political process. So that's my job. That's what I do. That's my official job. But I would also say that I do some organizing and activism too.
Cool. So what is your definition of climate change and how does it relate to your work?
Definitely. So climate change, I think, is obviously one of the most important issues. And when we're thinking about climate change, to be honest, when it pertains to my work, if you allow me, I would like to just slightly reframe it, because that's kind of what I do. And what I do with my work is climate justice. And what climate justice is how do we start to correct course from our environmental degradation that we have and the impacts of environmental degradation that we're seeing globally. And that spans from increased hurricanes and our climate change, so specifically climate change. So as our globe is getting hotter, because of our environment, because of human causes with our environment, environmental justice is taking that to the next level and also acknowledging and realizing how some of the folks who are most impacted are folks of the Global South, Black and brown and poor folks in communities where they're already vulnerable and they're usually more susceptible to living in proximity to a pollutant, to living in proximity to environmental hazards, refineries and mills and fracking wells and all of those things that while they overall hurt us all, they're just hurting those folks faster. So that's what climate justice is for me, and that's why we are fighting back against climate change.
So you already touched on this, but what is a more specific definition of environmental justice?
Yeah, so, and actually I'm happy to go more specifically. When I think about environmental justice, I think about the intersection of taking that climate change, pollution. And I think about the intersections of marginalized populations, right? So when we're thinking about climate justice, you have to think about the intersection of environment and race. That's environmental racism. And environmental racism has been one subset of our environmental justice movement that I have been a huge proponent for. But that a lot of folks don't really hear about. A lot of folks don't ever hear the phrase environmental racism. And that's why we kind of talk about it in that way. So environmental justice is really centering marginalized folks, marginalized communities, and the people who are going to be disproportionately impacted by environmental degradation. So that's specifically what environmental justice is. And what that looks like is a movement that, instead of only having, well-off, especially white folks who are at the center of climate action, who are at the center of the activism around environmental justice, it looks like how do we engage more deeply, communities that are historically at risk, communities that are historically vulnerable to corporate greed, to corporate abuse. How do we bring into the narrative and center people of the Global South? So folks who, as we are fighting climate change, and we see, in the United States, in Pittsburgh even, we'll see some of the effects of climate change. You know, we see the increased hurricanes. You know, we see our winters getting harsher. You know, we see our summers seeming to last longer. But when you think about the people who are already really feeling the impact of climate change, you know, you think about folks who live in island nations who are already being displaced from their, you know, from their ancestral homes. You know, we think about people who are going to be increasingly made climate refugees because their homelands are being destroyed. So when we think about climate justice, that's how do we center those folks? How do we think about them in our activism, in our calculus, in our policy making? So that's what climate justice is. It's really just recentering the people who are most impacted while still uplifting the whole topic.
So what is fracking and why does it pose a risk to citizens?
Yeah, so fracking is something that we have been fighting back against in our region. It's been a really fierce debate. And if you are somebody who is, you know, even just watching TV throughout the presidential election, you'll have heard something about Pennsylvania fracking, right? So fracking is basically, it's called hydraulic fracturing, where you are drilling a hole down into the earth. To extract the natural resources. And that process is fraught with risk. And some of the risks that have been studied are that it could contaminate, you know, the water supply. Other risks are that it poses long-term health effects for some of the folks who live within proximity of a fracking well. So what we've seen in places where there's already fracking, we've seen babies being born with low birth weight. We've seen folks with increased incidences of, you know, rare cancers. Near us, very close to us in Pittsburgh, you know, we've seen kids who have all mysteriously come down with one very particular cancer, Ewing sarcoma. And there's a thought that this is because they are in close proximity to, you know, to this industry. So that's what fracking is. And it's really dangerous because there is no safe way to do it, right? And also, aside from there not even being a safe way to do it, regulation comes into play too. So where you have, you know, our Department of Environmental Protection that's understaffed, that's under-resourced, and then not able to even look after the process and ensure that the process is even going as safely as possible. We had that added problem. So that's why it's such a huge issue. That's why it's so frightening. That's why it's something that so many people are fighting around, because we stand to really harm an entire community. And the other thing about fracking is that it's not normally in highly populated areas. The fracking proposals that we've had in our region are getting us pretty much the closest to a high density population than any other, you know, well that we've had so far.
So what is renewable energy and why is it good for the environment and the economy?
So renewable is essentially the opposite of fracking, right? If we are not using, you know, natural gas or using these processes that, you know, are extracting resources straight from the earth that we know we can run out of, or that we know the process to extract them is dangerous to folks. You know, looking at renewable energies is looking at solar energy, it's looking at wind, it's looking at all of these inexhaustible sources of, sources of energy that we have, that if we were to invest in it, and if we were to harness that power, we would be able to achieve the same goals that we have, but do it safer. And we'd be able to keep the earth clean. You know, we'd be able to lower the impact of climate change, lower that impact of pollution, but also still serve folks. So that's when we're looking at solar panels, solar farms. We're looking at wind power that we see. If you drive on the turnpike, you know, you'll see the windmills. But those are examples of renewable energy.
So what are some ways that you have in the past and will in the future help the environment?
Helping the environment seems like such a lofty thing, right? It sounds like such a big thing that you as an individual can't do. But I would like to say that's not true, right? Every one of us plays a role in helping the environment. Some of us play a big one, some of us play a little one. When I first came home back to Pittsburgh region, I've been gone. I went to law school. I went off to school. And when I came back, I was kind of like hit in the face with what it feels like to live in a community where we have unhealthy air and water, you know? Mm-hmm. And I kind of got into climate activism and kind of climate justice, well, I'll say, more so climate justice for me. I think I got into climate justice advocacy, not out of like an educational, not from an educational standpoint, but really out of necessity. You know, if you're Black or you're poor, you're more likely to live in close proximity to some sort of environmental hazard. So with that, you know, being said, that's what made me start wanting to run for office. I ran for office to organize, you know, our community to stop a fracking well. And in our campaign, you know, we knocked on doors, we knocked on thousands and thousands of doors. And we talked to our neighbors and we talked about the dangers of a fracking well being in close proximity to us. We talked about, you know, the fact that we already had some of the highest cases of asthma and respiratory illnesses, and we galvanized people to turn out and vote and to start to get new people in office. So I think that's one thing that I've done, you know, to help our earth, to help our environment. While since then, you know, we've been organizing to get more people in like us, more people who care about the environment, more people who recognize the urgency around climate action, who take that urgency very seriously and take it to heart. And in Harrisburg, we continue to fight for it. And we've expanded that fight here in Allegheny County by doing some more and getting some more people in. So that's my role. I think that's the role that I play in environmental and climate action. But the other thing that I like that I do is that I think that I try to amplify the voices of folks like you. Our students, you know, young people who are coming into activism and who are finding their space. The number one thing that I like to do is just to amplify you all, to give you the platform, let you all do the organizing, support your organizing, and make sure that the people who are coming up behind us have a better plan for our environment than the folks who came before me. And I think that's huge.
Yeah. So, how can people under the voting age like us help elect officials that care about the climate?
Just like this. This is exactly it, right? You all are bringing information to people. You're educating them on the topic, which is huge. I think that the one thing that young kids, like young folks, need to kind of embrace is that you're already powerful. Just because you can't vote yet doesn't mean that you don't know something. It doesn't mean that you don't understand it. In fact, in so many instances, especially with like climate action, which is really been invigorated by young people, you know, our action around climate has been catapulted into the stratosphere by young people taking a stance. That's because a lot of the times you know more than the adults because you experience it firsthand. So I say to young people, the first thing that you should do is to recognize that you don't have to wait to be an activist. You don't have to wait to be an advocate. You don't have to even wait to be political. You're already political. So just because you vote, don't vote, doesn't mean you're not political. So you can educate your parents. You can talk to your parents or your older siblings or your neighbors, people in your life who are voting age, and you can let them know how important it is to you, the environment is, how important this issue is to them. Share with them what you learn about the environment and the urgency that we have. Because we don't have an infinite amount of time to fix this. So share with them, let them know. Let them know the candidates who you've met that are prioritizing climate action and urge them to vote. Go with them, take them with you. You know, you can hold their hand, you can help them to fill out their absentee ballots, but you can actually go with them to ensure that they're voting the right way. That's the one thing you can do. But you can also still do your activism. You know, there are marches, there are strikes, climate strikes from students. There are so many different ways of advocating that our young people have been employing that's really gotten the message out to adults, to voters, and to politicians.
So kind of like how people can vote, what are other things in addition to voting that people above and below the voting age can do?
Absolutely. You can act with your money. You can act with your labor. You can act with your education. There are so many ways. Like voting is one way. It's incredibly important, but it can't ever work by itself. It's not created to work that way. We have to use every tool we have. So when we look at Greta Thunberg, for instance, or Ezra Hirsi, who is Congresswoman Ilhan Omar's daughter with the climate strike and all the young people who think it's so important that they've left school to do this. And I'm not saying don't leave school, tell your dad, I'm not advocating for you to leave school. But what I am saying though is that when something is important to you, there are ways that you can amplify that. Leaving school is one of them. Going to the protests or organizing a rally downtown, which we had one on Earth Day, the last Earth Day that we had before the pandemic. You know, we had a big student-led Earth Day where our young people actually organized that. And we had people all around the city and our colleges come to this event, right? That brings attention to it and it gets the attention of people in power. So that's what you wanna do. You know, we cannot spend our resources on people who pollute. We cannot spend our resources on folks who don't take climate action seriously. That's another thing we can do. So there's so much, and I do want to say that, but organizing is at the core of it. Organizing your classmates, organizing your community is at the core of climate action. As it doesn't matter if we vote, if we are not putting in the right people, right?
So why are people facing poverty more prone to the effects of climate change than others?
Yeah, so that comes back to, you know, that comes back to that concept of environmental justice and environmental racism. In our society, you know, we have a long, long history of discrimination. We can talk around it, but that's what it is. Mm-hmm. And when we were building up our nation, what we ended up doing was in communities where there were already factories and industry, if you were poor, you were more likely to have to live closer to that industry. You know, so the people who were richer, while they may have worked at the factory or the mill, they had a little bit more privilege to move farther away from that. So they would commute in. But if you were poorer, you couldn't avoid it. You know, so throughout our history and throughout, you know, cities across our country, you know, they're littered with communities that, excuse me, they're littered with communities that are highly insular. You know, they have no transportation. Maybe they were redlined in those communities. So Black and brown people were literally forced to live in poorer communities with more dangerous conditions. So that is the reason. Black and brown and poor people are more likely to live closer to these industries. And that affects everything. So if you live closer to it now, you're more likely to go to a school that's under-resourced. You're more likely to live in a community that doesn't have, you know, medical facilities or food. So they're food deserts and medical deserts. They're less likely to have transportation to get in and out of them. So they're physically trapped in these communities. And because of that, they're less healthy. You know, our communities, we have higher rates of asthma. Do you have asthma? You miss school. If you miss school, you are more inclined to be funneled into the school to prison pipeline. You're less ready, you know, for the career field or for college. So it creates a cycle, and that cycle buys your kids a one-way ticket back into that cycle. So that's, it creates poverty, and poverty forgets poverty. And you're more likely to be stuck in those communities where the air is thick and the water is poison.
If you were to leave everyone listening and us with a piece of advice and or information, what would it be?
My advice would be that the world can't wait for you to be ready. It can't wait for you to grow up. I always say this, especially to young people who I'm talking to, right? The world can't wait for you to grow up. Climate action can't wait for you. We need everybody to do their part right now, wherever it is. And that might look different for different people, depending on where you are and who you are, how old you are, what job you have, right? But everybody can do something. We kind of have to get out of that mentality that someone else is going to come in and save us. Everybody has a role to play in this. So whether you are a young person who is, you know, organizing your classmates around climate action or doing a podcast, that's one thing, that's doing a part. You know, if you are someone who is, you know, taking active steps to be more sustainable in the way you live, sustainable in our development, sustainable at your own house, at your own, you know, personal level. That's something that's helping us. Always be intersectional is the next piece of advice that we give. If we are going to save the earth and we're going to save our climate, we have to do it with all of us. We can't leave anyone behind. So don't forget, you know, Black and brown folks, don't forget poor folks, don't forget disabled folks. We can't afford to leave them behind as we're doing our activism. So those are the big things that I would say. Start today and leave no one behind.
Thank you so much, Representative.
Cool. Thank you all so much for having me.
We really hope you enjoyed this episode.
And thanks again to State Representative Summer Lee.
And also, remember to do good things for the environment.
You also can check out our Instagram at Concerning Climate Podcast.
Yeah, we're going to post some cool stuff there. So make sure to check that out. See you soon.
Bye.